Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, and the Land of Israel Network here at thelandofisrael.com. Welcome to our listeners near and far. Thanks so much for joining us. It is the 15th of August, 2016, broadcasting from Jerusalem. Big shout out to my man, Binyamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. Without him, there is no sound. Also want to say hello and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the other landofisrael.com show hosts are. I know they're a busy bunch traveling the world, talking about Israel, bringing the reality to those who may be relying, unfortunately, on the mainstream media, not getting the true picture. So shout out to all the other guys and gals here on the landofisrael.com network. So we are here in a period post Tisha B'Av, the saddest day of the calendar yesterday, the ninth of the month of Av, tragedies and calamities throughout Jewish history. And now I feel that while, you know, we had summer before the 3 weeks and the 9 days, I feel like it's a whole new phase in the summer here in Israel. You know, last night I shaved. I had this beard for 3 weeks and in mourning. I shaved, clean shaven. It's just there's a whole new feeling waking up in Israel, in Gush Etzion this morning, being here in Jerusalem, getting ready just to enjoy the rest of the summer. Just a completely different atmosphere now that we are out of the period. We're always mourning the destruction of the temple, but of course Tisha B'Av has a special meaning and a special feeling. So we're moving ahead. Unfortunately, though, as reported by Israel National News yesterday, there were Jews who got up to the Temple Mount. Apparently about 300 Jewish visitors made it up to the holy site. But then the Arab walk, the Jordanian walk up there, the religious trust, if you will, started a mini riot, perhaps, chanting Allahu Akbar and causing disturbances for the Jewish visitors up there. And then eventually security forces, instead of, I guess, getting them out of there, they decided to close the Temple Mount to Jews when all was said and done. Apparently about 900 visitors in total, 300 Jews made it up, and the other non-Jewish tourists made it up to the Temple Mount. But we're still in a situation where it's problematic to go up to the Temple Mount because the other side riots, and those who want to go up and express themselves, Jews want to express, non-Muslims want to express themselves in prayer, are not allowed to do so. Just a little Tisha B'Av news yesterday. On the show today, by the way, while the Tisha B'Av period is now over, 11 years ago this week was the expulsion of all Jewish life from Gush Katif and from the northern Shomron and northern Gaza as well, all Jews. As part of the so-called disengagement, I call it the expulsion plan, which I still don't understand till this date, happened 11 years ago. It was actually scheduled originally for Tisha B'Av itself, pushed off by a day, but it still remains a strong and very sad chapter in Israeli history. So some of those who are doing some amazing work till this day, 11 years later, because so many are still unsettled, are the good people at Job Katif, an organization that helps provide employment and training, job skills training for the Gush Katif evacuees, refugees, I like to call them, unfortunately. Judy Lowy, the executive director of Job Katif, will be on the show in just a few minutes. We'll get to another little bit more news here. But before we do so, don't forget, you can be in touch with me during the week. Josh@thelandofisrael.com is my email. On Twitter at Jew of Zion, and of course on Facebook, Josh Haston, H-A-S-T-E-N. So as we were sitting down last night, breaking the fast, my phone started going crazy. I get many of the alerts from the news sources and from the first responders in case of emergencies. And this came on the wire, if you will, just after the breaking of the fast, a female attacker stabbed, that is a jihadist, let's be clear, stabbed an Israeli soldier in the northern Shomron near the Shaked community Sunday evening. The IDF indicates that the female terrorist arrived at the scene by car at the checkpoint, emerged from a vehicle with a knife, attempted to kill the security officer, only succeeded in lightly wounding her. So this is how we broke the fast to the news of yet another attack in the northern Shomron. The attacker was neutralized without injury. That happened again last night. Also in the news, and this is something I'm directly involved with now with my work at Regavim, an organization dedicated to preserving Israeli state lands, the community of Susia is in the news these days. And you might hear about Arab Susia. And the reality is Susia was an ancient Jewish town located in the Hebron Hills. And Arab and Bedouin squatters, under the approval of the Palestinian Authority with European Union funding, ever since, this goes back to 1986, from the village of Yatta, a clan, a family of Arabs came out and set up an illegal encampment all the way back in 86, and this has been going back and forth for years. Adjacent to the archaeological original site of Susia, which is a 1,500-year-old Jewish community reestablished in modern times. So Avigdor Lieberman, our defense minister now, after many years of court battles, now has to make a decision whether he will enforce the law, which the courts have already decided, saying that this so-called Arab Susia, which isn't really even a village, it's basically a bunch of thieves and squatters who have taken over this land. He has to decide whether he is going to enforce the law and take down this illegal encampment, which is in Area C, which is under Israeli control militarily and municipal control there in Judea and Samaria. He has to decide whether he's going to enforce the law and take it down or let it stand, let this thing perpetuate and keep on going. So my position as the international director of Regavim, and I have an op-ed in today's Jerusalem Post I'd like you to check out, explains the reality behind the situation, the fact that this is not in any way, shape, or form a historical Palestinian Arab village. That is a myth. You're talking about a group of people who have homes in the nearby town of Yatta, which isn't actually particularly friendly to the Jews, and who are squatting and have been squatting on the land in recent years. And aerial footage shows that there was never a village on this site, which is now located very near the original archaeological Jewish Susia. And it's our opinion that the squatters here in their makeshift camp, I won't even call it a village, their makeshift encampment, need to go. The laws of the land need to be enforced. They are squatting illegally. The government has put together alternative proposals, moving them into Area B, not far away, which is under the Palestinian Authority municipal control. But they're refusing because this is all a ploy. This is all part of the Palestinian Authority and the European Union backing it. It's part of their plan to create a de facto Palestinian state in Area C. They want to take over these areas. So if one day there are negotiations between Israel and the PA, then they can turn around and say, yeah, look at this land here in Area C. Well, this should be part of the Palestinian state, God forbid, because we have facts on the ground. We have people living there. They've been living there for years. It's a historical village. Those are the lies being perpetuated by those who are illegally squatting, the thieves who are squatting on the swaths of land, state land, there near the original Susia, the authentic, historical. There's a beautiful, magnificent synagogue, the remains of, in the archaeological park there in the southern Hebron Hills community of Susia, the original Susia. And this is in the news, and we await a decision by the defense minister. Apparently, the Prime Minister Netanyahu, is trying to extend this deadline imposed by the High Court of Justice, and he's trying to say, let's keep negotiating, let's not move them, those illegal squatters. So this will be, I guess, an internal battle between the Prime Minister and the defense minister over the fate of this illegal encampment. And our position at Regavim, and my position, I believe, very strongly, that the laws must be enforced. Those squatters must be removed from this area adjacent to Jewish communities down there in the Hebron Hills. But this is a democracy, and we have a set of laws, and those laws should be enforced. So hopefully the defense minister will do the right thing, take down the illegal Arab encampment. The European Union and others, about 50 so-called left-wing or humanistic organizations say, this is a this is an issue of humanitarian proportion, But that's not the case. This is a ruse, a disguised humanitarian, potential humanitarian travesty, which is not the case. These people have homes in Yatta. This is a land grab, plain and simple. Let's hope that the government does the right thing and enforces the law. That's what we're calling on. In just a few minutes here, Judy Lowy, Executive Director of Job Katif, providing employment solutions for those residents, the 10,000 approximately who were thrown out of their homes in Gush Katif now 11 years on. And I spent my Tisha B'Av, as I do nearly every year now, in addition to commemorating the destruction of the Jewish temples and the sin of the spies and everything else, which makes it a solemn and sad and tragic day, also dedicate a significant portion of my day to remembering the life of those who were living in Gush Katif, the lifestyle, because it wasn't just about destroying their homes and throwing them out and also exhuming the bodies, let's remember, of the dead in Gush Katif, taking out the cemetery and removing the bodies and bringing them to be reburied here on this side of the in pre-1967 Israel. But it was really a lifestyle. It wasn't just homes. It wasn't just people living there. It was an entire way of life which was destroyed 11 years ago. And now, thanks to the good people at Job Katif, Judy Lowy and Rav Rimon and everyone else, they've been helping them tremendously to get their lives. Now 11 years and people are still unsettled, getting their lives back in order. So we're going to go to Judy Lowy here in a minute. My name is Josh Haston. This is Israel Uncensored on the landofisrael.com network. Thanks so much for joining us. Shout out Ben Bresky, our engineer. Be in touch. Josh at thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Josh Haston, and on Twitter at Jew of Zion. We'll be right back with Judy Lowy. Founded in 1902, World Mizrahi is a global, Torah-driven, community-focused educational organization committed to Jewish identity and destiny. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement. And we are back. Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network here at thelandofisrael.com. Thanks so much for joining us on the 15th of August, 2016. And as we were talking about before, it is the day after Tisha B'Av here. It's actually the 11th of Av, because Tisha B'Av was pushed off by one day. But we mentioned it before, 11 years since the expulsion of all Jewish life from Gush Katif, from Gaza, back in 2005, and the situation is still not resolved. In other words, I was just down in Nitzan, I mentioned it on last week's show, and there's still over 140 families who are still unsettled, don't have permanent housing. We're talking about 11 years later, and the situation is still not 100% resolved. But one organization over the years, since the beginning, since literally the day after the expulsion from Gush Katif took place, Rav Tzvi Rimon of Alon Shvut, he went to the hotels to speak with the families to see what their needs were. And here we are 11 years later, an organization still committed to helping those who were thrown out of their homes in Gush Katif by finding them employment, providing job programming, and all sorts of other programs to get them back on their feet. According to the latest information I have here, 2,700 Gush Katif evacuees are now working thanks to the holy work of the organization called Job Katif. Joining us now on the show is the executive director of the organization of Job Katif, Judy Lowy. Judy, thanks so much for joining us here on Israel Uncensored, thelandofisrael.com.
Thank you, Josh. It's my pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning to you. If you can just reflect here, we are now a day after the fast of Tisha B'Av, and so much, at least of my personal experience on that day, and I know for many other Israelis here, is not only the focus on the destruction of the temples, but also on what happened 11 years ago when Jewish life, as we know it, ended, for now, temporarily at least, in Gush Katif. Tell us your reflections here during this difficult time of the year for those who were thrown out of their homes.
I agree with you, Josh. Somehow it's always easier for people to connect to an event that they experienced or took place not too long ago. And even though obviously the main reasons for Tisha B'Av are the destruction of our two Batei Mikdash, every Tisha B'Av with me now has become synonymous with what happened in Gush Katif. I've had the privilege over the last few years of working with Rav Rimon at Job Katif and thereby meeting so many of these wonderful families, and they really, really are wonderful families. Rav Rimon, as you said, went down to the hotel as thousands of other people did in those first few days. But the special thing about Rav Rimon was that he was probably the first person that realized that the best way to rebuild their lives was by finding them employment. A statistic that not everybody knows is that 85% of the people who lived in Gush Katif worked in Gush Katif, which meant that overnight, not only did they lose their homes, their communities, their shuls, everything they knew, they lost their source of income. Their source of income was literally destroyed. And Rav Rimon, after he'd attended to their basic needs, which were a lot, but I won't go into that now, he suddenly looked around and saw all these people who he knew had been so industrious in Gush Katif. We all remember the amazing, amazing agriculture that came out of Gush Katif. And also there were a lot of children there, and there was education that was flourishing there. And people were working there, people had businesses there, and they were hard workers, and as a result they had good lives. And he saw them just sitting there doing nothing, and he realized what they needed was to get back to work. Rav Rimon ascribes tremendously to what the Rambam says, that the highest form of tzedakah is to help a person stand on their own 2 feet. Don't give him the fish, give him the fishing rod. And at the time, he didn't even realize he was setting up an organization. It was a real grassroots effort. He walked into one of the hotels one morning with his cell phone and made an announcement and said, anybody that is interested in working, even temporarily, because remember, they were in hotels. They didn't know how long they'd be there for. They didn't know where they would be taken to. When they would be moved, they were moved to these caravillas, a euphemism for these trailers. They didn't know how long they'd be there. Everything was so unknown, was so unclear to them. But Rav Rimon said, anyone who wants to work, even if it's for a few weeks, come speak to me. And he remembers that the first person that came to speak to him was a young man who said, I'm a carpenter. I had a successful carpentry business in Gush Katif. Any work I can do, that would be great. And Rav Rimon called up somebody who knew who was a carpenter and arranged it. And from there, it just snowballed. More and more people came to speak to him. Volunteers came to help him. He suddenly realized that he had to find temporary work for a lot of people. And he thought about it and realized that we were already in the Chodesh Av, and that at least in the Yerushalayim area and other areas of Israel, there were companies that offer work just before the Chagim, because they deal with everything to do with Sukkot. They build Sukkot, they sell them, they sell the Arbat Minim and so on. And he called them up, and in one day he got work for about 30 people. Or again, it was temporary. And this grassroots effort just grew and grew and grew until a few months later he realized he had to make this into an organization. And he called it in Hebrew, Ta'asu Katif, in English, Job Katif. And Baruch Hashem, I'm very proud to say that we have reversed the numbers. If they were 85% unemployed the day after the uprooting from Gush Katif, today there are 85% who are employed. That's wonderful. But it still means that there are 15% who are unemployed. And we're trying as hard as we can to help them. I don't have to tell you that if 11 years later these people are still not working, it means that it's very, very hard cases, all kinds of problems in the family, health problems, people who passed away, divorces, problems with the children. But we're doing whatever we can to help them. And we're also helping the second generation. At a certain point, Rav Rimon decided that the children, the ones that were children at the time, they grew up, they needed help. And in addition to all the counseling we give, the coaching, job finding, retraining courses, we also helped young people by helping 200 of them through a very generous foundation in Toronto. We helped 200 young people get full university scholarships and study for a degree. And because a lot of people in Gush Katif were self-employed, they had little businesses, we also help them to set up new businesses. There are today 240 new small businesses all over Israel run by Gush Katif families, and we're continuing with our work. Not many people left to help. We're down to, as you said, maybe somewhere between 150 and 200 people, but we are determined not to abandon them. And even though we had actually branched out, and I don't know if you know this, Josh, we actually began branching out and taking everything we learned over the last few years in helping weak, sidelined populations get back to work, and we're taking it to other populations too. But we will never, ever abandon a Gush Katif family. We will never say to anybody from Gush Katif who comes to us, sorry, it's too late, we're not going to help you anymore. We've already started other programs. We have a wonderful program called Achotenu, which means our sister, or it can mean our nurse. And we are helping young Ethiopian youth study to become hospital nurses. And we are hoping that this will break the cycle of poverty. We have another program called Ta'asu Chayil, which we help impoverished soldiers. And unfortunately, there are a lot of soldiers who go into the IDF, into their regular service, and they not only do they have enough money for their own basic needs, but their parents were relying on them to work and supply money and food for the families. And it's a well-known problem in the army, and the net result was that these young men were unable to finish their army service, which is bad for the army, even worse for the young man. Because, I mean, you've been in Israel long enough to understand that if a young man goes for a job interview, the first thing an employer looks at is his resume and wants to know what he did in the army. And if he sees that he hasn't finished his army service, it's a black mark against him. So we're working in coordination with the army, who grant these young men work days or work weeks or work months, and we're in touch with employers, and we find them work during their army service. And what's beautiful about this program is when these young men are working, their fellow soldiers in the unit cover for them. And we're very much hoping that this is a new program. We only began it a few months ago, but it's taken off tremendously because there's a need for it. And we're hoping this way that these young men will complete their army service, which is good for them, go to the country, and afterwards, when they're discharged, we want to take them under our wings. We want to give them the counseling that we know how to do and set them on some course of study to get them qualified to break that cycle of poverty. So those are our main programs.
First of all, it's unbelievable the reach that Jabhat Katif has been able to affect, and all those you're able to help, in addition to, you know, the Jabhat Katif itself and the other programs. And the numbers here show that it's 2,700 evacuees who are now working. Another program I see here is Haboidim, which we know very well on our program. We're good friends with those who run the Haboidim, the social business model offering employment, rehabilitation for those with mental illness. I see that you're involved in that program as well. Our good friend Rabbi Guy Avihud is our scholar in residence here on the show, and Ellie Letterman and everybody else. I also want to know, I remember that there was a campaign a while back in which the government actually, after years, I'm not sure how many, but you can let us know, got involved in the efforts of Jabhat Katif, was a partner in providing matching funds in order so that you can continue your work. Where does that stand right now in terms of the government's involvement in helping the organization expand, reach all of these different populations and communities?
Well, it was great when they finally stepped in to help us financially. We were trying for years to get the government involved, and it was when Netanyahu set up a state commission of inquiry at the end of 2009, not into should the uprooting have taken place, but how have the people been treated. One of the areas they explored was employment, and their findings were that the only organization that was helping the Gush Katif families get back to work was Jabhat Katif, and it was they who recommended that the government step in. And so from the beginning of 2010 until the end of 2015, we got matching funds from the government. But unfortunately, it ended at the end of 2015. Basically, the government said, 10 years have passed, no more budget. And so from the beginning of 2016, we're on our own again. We're back to fundraising efforts. And in fact, this past Shabbat Chazon, before Tisha B'Av, we just ran, and we're basically still running our annual fundraising campaign. We chose Chazon originally, obviously, because of the date, because of the uprooting of the Gush Katif families took place straight after Tisha B'Av. And this year, in fact, there was a lot of discussion as to whether we should stick to that date, because we're not just helping Gush Katif families, we're still helping them,
right,
but we're also helping young Ethiopians and other populations. But we looked into it more, and we saw that actually the theme of Shabbat Chazon is Tzedek u'Mishpat. It's righteousness and justice. And we called our campaign chazon shel chesed, a vision of chesed, a vision of charity, of loving kindness, and of giving. Because what we're doing now is we are taking what the Rambam says, which is finding work, finding employment for a person is the very best way of helping him. It's the very highest level of tzedakah, and we feel it's a very, very fitting theme for Shabbat Chazon. And we ran this campaign in shuls and synagogues, in many hundreds of them in Israel and in North America, in America and in Canada. It's very possible that many of your listeners saw the material in the shuls, and we're still running the campaign. And this is a campaign where we're hoping, please God, to raise enough funds to run all these programs that we want to do, because there is no longer any government support.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, after visiting Nitzan and getting the latest facts, and as you said, seeing that, you know, there still are 150-plus families who are still in need, I would hope that the government maybe would reconsider that. I saw that even last week, without to get, you know, not getting political here in terms of the actual expulsion from Gush Katif, but even Isaac Herzog, Bozhi Herzog, recently said that the way it was done, the evacuation from Gush Katif, was not done properly, was a mistake. So even if those may not agree or may agree in terms of the actual event itself, there's definitely, I think, a consensus that in terms of those who were thrown out of their homes, the way it was done was improper. So I hope that the government reconsiders until every last family, as was promised 11 years ago, there's a solution for every last family. But that being said, I see that you're now on your own in terms of your private initiatives in order to carry out this campaign and in order to raise awareness and to raise the funds necessary to help all of these people. So how can people today get involved in all the efforts, the Job Katif and all the other projects? What's the best way to reach you? What's the best way to get involved in the Shabbat Chazon project?
Thanks, Josh. Well, first of all, the easiest way would be to go to our website, which is www.jobkatif.org, and all the information is on our website. And for Israeli listeners, you can make a phone call. I'll say the number now. The number is 08-672-5671. That's 08-672-5671. That's to make a phone call and be able to donate automatically. And for people, and other people can go to the website where you can either donate on the website itself, or you can get other information as to where to send a check to, where to call, and so on and so forth. I would really like to take this opportunity, you know, to ask the listeners to help us here, because we really believe that what we're doing is strengthening Eretz Israel. I mean, it's true that Baruch Hashem, Israel in general, is doing well. We have a good economy, and we have like this central part of Israel that is doing well and have good jobs, and Baruch Hashem are making it. But we must never forget that on the periphery, on the edges of society, are people who are living beneath the poverty line. We have these people from Gush Katif still. The Ethiopian community, I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but one out of every two Ethiopian families lives beneath the poverty line. That's 50% of them. That is a staggering statistic.
Not acceptable.
It's not acceptable. And many, many chayalim. And what Rav Rimon and we are trying to do is to strengthen our society by making the wonderful opportunities that Israel has available to everybody in society, not just to the mainstream, but also opening it up to the periphery and help them to enjoy what Eretz Yisrael has to offer today.
Judy Loy, Executive Director of Job Katif, I want to thank you so much, not only for coming on the show today, but really for the holy work that your organization has been doing for years, yourself, Rav Rimon, and the entire staff. It really is holy, holy work, and you are helping, you know, a special place in my heart always for the people from Gush Katif, the salt of the earth, those people, and it's great to see that you've expanded your operation and helping those in need. I want to thank you for your time and continue in your success, and to listeners out there, I definitely would recommend you you go to the website, you get the information, and if you can contact me as well, I'm happy to provide the information or hook you up with Judy in order to get involved in this very important initiative for the people of Israel, for the land of Israel, for the nation of Israel. Judy, have a wonderful day and keep up your good work.
Thank you so much, Josh, and shalom to everybody.
Shalom,
bye-bye.
Shalom. We are out of time, ladies and gentlemen. This is another edition, has been another edition of Israel Uncensored here on the Land of Israel Radio Network at thelandofisrael.com. My name is Josh Haston. Get in touch with me during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Josh Haston, and on Twitter at Jew of Zion. Big shout out to Binyamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire here in Jerusalem, broadcasting to you from the capital of the Jewish people. Thank you so much. And most importantly, between now and next Monday, be safe wherever you are. Be safe. All the best from Jerusalem. I am out. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Have you ever planted a grapevine? What if the grapevine happened to be in the land of Israel? Not only that, but if you were a Christian planting this grapevine in the mountains of Israel, you would be fulfilling prophecy that Isaiah and Jeremiah foretold more than 3,000 years ago. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to fulfill prophecy on the mountains of Israel by joining us this harvest. Go to hayuvel.com, that's H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, for more information.